good to be with you today. Enjoyed that song service, that theme of the songs this morning. I hope you did as well. And tonight we will have our singing night. I think we announced that this morning, but we usually have our singing night the first Sunday of the month. The last week, Patty Kendall-Ball was here on Sunday night, so we moved our singing night to tonight. Gary is in charge of the singing tonight, so if you do want to lead a song, be sure to get with Gary. Let him know that so we can make a list. And if you can, please be here at 5 o'clock for that. We always enjoy that every month. We are continuing in our study of 1 Corinthians, and we just have a couple more lessons in this series. This morning, we're going to be talking about 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, talking about the resurrection body. This is a section that starts in verse 30 through 49. And so what we have seen so far here is that Paul has strongly asserted that those who are in Christ, even though they die, they are going to be raised from the dead. And he talks about that in comparison to Jesus Christ, who was raised from the dead. And because Christ was raised from the dead, that's also going to happen to us. And if that is denied, Paul says, well, it's just like Christ wasn't raised. So those two things go hand in hand. Since Christ has been risen from the dead, then certainly we also know that we will be raised. So what Paul addresses here in this section of the Scripture is how this resurrection is going to occur, which is sometimes difficult to grasp. And I'll tell you, I don't understand everything about that, but we need to have faith in what God has to say about that, because we've never seen anybody raised from the dead before, and certainly there were those in the days of Christ that did witness the fact that Jesus did was risen from the dead. So it's understandable that this resurrection could be difficult for some to grasp, and why Paul would need to talk about it in the first place. It seems that the resurrection from the dead was being rejected by some in Corinth. And didn't realize this, but looking at some history of the lives of people in that day, they didn't, of course, we know that they didn't remotely live like we do. And their lifespan was not close to what our lifespan is today. In fact, in the Greco-Roman world, approximately 50% of children would die by age 10. Had no idea that was the case. But you think about the lack of the kind of medicine that we have today, and certainly that probably was the case. About 30% of children died by age 1, but if you made it to age 5, then you were likely to live to the ripe old age of 52. And so, these concepts of what happened after death certainly would be very real for them, and they're encountering that a lot faster than we do today. That was just the nature of the time. And so there were many different views of life after death in the Roman world. And one of the prominent views is that there was life after death, but it was a disembodied life. That the soul leaving the body and not possessing a life, or possessing a body, the soul leaving the body, not possessing a body, was something that was desired. And the body was often described as a prison. And you've probably heard that kind of phraseology before, that the body was described as a prison of the soul, and that the death freed the soul from that prison. So this concept of life after death was something that was popular in that day. But when you look at Luke chapter 16, the account of the rich man and Lazarus that introduces us to or talks about the Hadean world, where there's this place of those that are dead waiting for the final day of resurrection, that's something that was not popular to them and would have not been, it would have been rejected by the Greek thinking. Just as the fact that Jesus rose from the dead bodily and not just spiritually, that was something that Paul was addressing here. And he addressed that in chapter 15, that this was the first fruits, that Jesus did that first. And then, likewise, we are going to do that. And so that's what Paul is addressing here. And seems to be addressing a problem that he knows that people will have, or a question that they know that they will have. And he asked this hypothetical question. in verse 50. But someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come? And so he asks the question, and he answers the question. It's a question that I think we can all understand why it would be a question. The resurrection seems impossible to the human mind. Why? Well, the body is decayed. And you know, I've never had the desire to go dig up a grave. And most of us would not have the desire to do that. Sometimes people have come across skeletons, and in fact, we've got a skeleton in our fake skeleton in our house right now that we keep moving from room to room trying to scare people. But why is there? If it were a real skeleton, it would be a skeleton because all the flesh on those bones would have been decayed. We understand that a rotted corpse, how can it be raised to life and bring us into eternity? That's something that would be hard to understand. And because I don't understand how something works, does that mean that it doesn't work? Just because I don't understand something, does it mean that it's not possible? So, Paul is dealing with the question here that, well, how would that work? How could somebody be raised from the dead? How can a physical body be raised from the dead? So, spiritually speaking, when it comes to what God can do, we certainly do understand that He can do things that others cannot. That something that may seem impossible to us is very possible with God. And so we are called to be people of faith, and it's dangerous really to suggest that something is impossible just because we don't understand how it might be. The Scriptures do point out in many places that there is a physical resurrection, and not just a spiritual one. We've seen that in the context of what we're looking at here with Jesus and Paul telling us that He is the first fruits. So what happened to Jesus will happen to us. But there's other Scriptures too we can look at in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 verses 1 through 4. Paul says, "For we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened, not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life." Of course, what Paul's talking about here is that there's going to be a change, that we're in this tent, we're in this body, and the older you get, we understand that we're going to groan a little bit. I've been groaning with my hip, and we're going to take care of that. But there's things that happen to our body as we age. John chapter 5, verse 28 says, "Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming when all who are in the tombs will hear His voice and come out. And those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of judgment." So here's a reference to those in the tombs hearing the voice of Christ and coming out. Well, how does that happen? They're going to be decomposed. They're going to be decayed. Well, we have to have faith that what God says can happen, can happen. And Paul goes on to address this because it's a question that they have. And so he addresses this with a principle of change that we see in nature. Verse 35, "How are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come? You foolish person, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies, and what you sow is not the body that is to be, but a bare kernel, perhaps of wheat or of some other grain, but God gives it a body as He has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body." And so Paul explains here how the physical resurrection is possible by teaching them about this principle of the seed. First of all, he says the seed is not made alive unless it dies. I think we can understand that when we look at seed, because he says what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. When a seed falls off a tree or whatever, the seed goes through a decomposition. It decomposes. It's it ceases to exist in its original form as a seed before it can come to life. And Jesus uses that same figure of His resurrection in John chapter 12. John chapter 12, verse 24, He says, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." And we understand that, you know, if a seed falls off of a plant, that's part of the death of that plant because it falls off. You know, right now we see a lot of leaves that are turning. And so I've heard people say, you know, let's drive around and look at the dying plants. Let's drive around and look at the dead leaves. Well, we never say it that way. We want to go look at the autumn color. But what we're looking at is the death of the leaf. Well, when the seed falls, you know, the portion around the seed decomposes. It's sort of a death, but then it comes back to life because it starts to grow again. And Jesus likens His death to that here, John chapter 12. I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone, but if it dies, it bears much fruit. We all understand that in regard to nature, that there's a lot of growth that comes from a seed. And He also says here in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 37, that the seed planted is not the body that will come up from the ground. Verse 37, "What you sow is not the body that is to be, but a bare kernel, perhaps a wheat or some other grain." So it's not possible to look at the seed and know, you know, what's going to happen in the future, is what He's saying. The same way that the body that dies, it's not going to be the same body when God raises it to life. And so if they're thinking, well, how can the body that's decomposed, how can it come back to life? That doesn't make any sense to us physically. Then you're foolish if you think of it in that way, because the body that died is not going to be the same body that comes back to life. So there's a transformation that's going to occur. And He elaborates more on that in just a moment. He says in verse 38, "But God gives it a body as He has chosen." So there's a new body. God's going to give it. So we don't have to worry about what that transformation is going to be. Because, you know, there's some of us in our current body, you know, we haven't ever really been that good looking in the first place. But then when we decay, it's certainly going to be a lot worse. Well, Paul said, don't worry about that. Don't worry about what the transformed body is going to be, because God is going to take care of that. God is going to give each of us a body that's ready for the new life in the spiritual realm with God. He goes on, verse 39. Verse 39 says, "For all flesh is not the same, but there is one kind for humans, another for animals, another for birds, and another for fish." There are heavenly bodies and earthly bodies, but the glory of the heavenly is of one kind, and the glory of the earthly is of another. There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars, for a star differs from star in glory. So what He's pointing out here is that there's vast differences in creation between different kinds of animals, different kinds of things. And so do we really need to question about whether God can take care of this? We should not question God's ability to create for us a new body. He certainly has created many different bodies. And our resurrected body can be radically different than our earthly body. So He uses a number of illustrations here. He talked about the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, that show us that God gives us different kinds of body for different habitats. The flesh that's given to humans wouldn't be appropriate for birds, would it? It would not be appropriate for fish. You know, the fish have their body and the birds have their body because it's appropriate to what their role is. So what Paul's saying is God's able to take care of that. He's given us different bodies for different situations. and our earthly bodies are built in a particular way by God for the way that we live our life. In fact, you know, one of the great evidences, I believe, for belief in God is the intricacy of nature and the intricacy of our body. You know, Ethan's going through nursing school right now, and I wonder sometimes how people can get into so much detail about how the body works and how intricate it is and how it has to be regulated to be a certain temperature and how everything works together as it should, that certainly would point to a creator who knew what he was doing to make all those things work very precisely, and how a person could be involved in those kind of studies and not have faith in this creator that created the birds and he created the stars and he created our bodies just as they should be in the particular way that is going to be appropriate for living on this earth. He also says, Paul also says that God is going to give us heavenly bodies that are built in a different way. And so whatever it is that we need in eternity, God's going to give it to us. And so that's the point, that this in eternity, the disembodied state or whatever you think that it might be, you know, he's saying you really don't know, but God's going to take care of it. A new body is going to be given to exist in the world to come. And so he goes on in verses 42 through 44 and talks about the difference between the risen body and the earthly body. He says, so it is with the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. Thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. So he illustrates here how radically different the two bodies are, that we are being transformed from a body that perishes into a body that is imperishable. And I think that we're all thankful for that. You know, as we grow older, you know, our bodies perish more and more. In fact, the last time Jarrell and I were down in Orlando, and I still want to ride Space Mountain and those kind of things, I looked at the sign and it said, you must be free from high blood pressure and back problems and this thing. It has the list. And I thought, I've got every one of those things. I'm not really supposed to be riding it. And I can remember looking at those signs and laughing, ha ha, you know, that doesn't apply to me. But now, the perishable body, it's a big sign for me that this isn't for you. And so it's not any fun anymore to ride it, because I wonder if I'm going to live through the experience. You know, it used to be exciting, but now it's exciting in a different way that I actually live to tell about it. But the point is that we have bodies that are deteriorating. And Paul says, our new body is not going to deteriorate. And you young people, you may not appreciate that like as older ones do, but that's an exciting thing, that we currently have what Paul says is a dishonorable body. And that, and spiritually speaking too, that it's ruined and it's corrupted by sin. But God is going to change us physically and spiritually. He's going to change us into an undefiled body. The bodies that we have now are weak. And they're breakable. They're subject to, you know, the ravages of time. They're temporary. They're fragile. But we are going to be given a powerful body, a body that is not weak. The resurrected bodies have nothing to weigh them down, to slow them down, or to make them tired. The bodies, Paul says, we have now, you know, they're suited for this world. The natural body is suited for what we are experiencing now, but in the future we will need something different. And Paul is saying that God is going to take care of that. God is going to take care of making sure that we have what we need to live eternally with Him. So the new body prepared for heaven is going to be nothing like the body that we have now. And that's the difference that Paul points out here in these scriptures. He goes on and talks about the further proof for this. He says that the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. Verse 46, but it is not the spiritual that is first, but the natural, and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, so also are those who are of the dust, and is the man of heaven. So also are those who are of heaven. Just as we are born the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. So the end of verse 44, you know, starts this argument for our new resurrected body. It says if there is a natural body, then there is also a spiritual body. And Paul quotes Genesis 2, verse 7 to prove that there's two different bodies. That there's a natural body that's represented by Adam, and there's also a spiritual body that's represented by the risen Christ. And so the first body is appropriate for the existence in this natural creation. And he talked about the dust. The second body will, you know, be appropriate for the existence in the world to come. So what we can state here in maybe a different way is that Adam's body was the model of the natural bodies, and that Christ's resurrected body is the model of the spiritual body. Just as God gave life for us to live in this world, as we can see, started with Adam, God also gives us life to live in the world to come, and you know, through Jesus Christ. But Paul says the order is important. The first order is that the natural body comes first. And after the natural body, then comes the spiritual body. So there's an order to these things. Just as the seed is going to be the first, and then the plant comes from that seed, so also we must have a natural body that comes first, and then the spiritual body comes second. And so we understand that. We begin life in the human body, and with that, after that, we have the spirit body for the spiritual life. We're going to be given a new, glorious, imperishable spiritual body. Verse 47 really underlines this point. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. We were over at my mom's the other day, and she was talking about cleaning something and having to get under a piece of furniture. And she said she found a man under there. And what she meant was there was a lot of dust. You know, that there was so much dust that she thought there was actually a person there. And it made my wife so excited to learn that there was actually dust in my mother's house. You know, because you usually don't see it. But what Paul is saying here is that there's an order to these things, that the man was made out of dust, and our bodies are going to return to that dust. And the second man, which is Christ, is from heaven, and our new bodies are going to be made for living in heaven. So there's a physical body and a spiritual body, and until that resurrection, what do we bear? Well, we bear the image of dust. And Paul, you know, makes this point that this resurrection to the new body is not going to occur until Christ returns. So until the resurrection, you know, we bear the image of the physical body. The body that is associated with Adam is mortal, and it's bound to the earth from which it comes, or from which it came. And a body associated with the risen Christ is going to be immortal, and like the image of Christ. Philippians chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, Paul makes the same point to the Philippian brethren. He says, but our citizenship is in heaven, And from it, we await a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body to be a like His glorious body by the power that enables Him even to subject all things to Himself. And so what Paul's presenting to the Corinthians is not something he didn't, you know, submit to others like the Philippian brethren. He's teaching the same thing to them, that our body is going to be transformed to a glorious body or an imperishable body, not like the body that we have here on the earth. And so, you know, what does this mean to us? Well, certainly it should help us in our dedication to Christ and cause us to live the way that we should. But what we need to understand is that our body here is not the most important thing that we need to be concerned about. You know, Paul is trying to teach them to be concerned about the next body, where they are going to spend eternity, and to make sure that they are prepared for that. You are more than your body. You are just temporary. You are temporarily living in this earthly body now. When Christ returns, you're going to be given a new body. And it's not going to be like what you have now. It's going to be a glorious, incorruptible, imperishable body built to live with the Lord forever. So, what happens, you know, the bottom line is what happens to this body that I have now is not that important. We understand that, you know, we want to be healthy and we don't want to be in pain, but eventually that body is going to perish. And so, it doesn't really matter what happens to our bodies when we die. God has the power to change our bodies from being decayed and corrupted to something that's imperishable and glorious. Now, I've always found it interesting that, and I don't mean to diminish this or belittle it in any way, but that people are concerned about where it is that they will be buried. And I can understand that maybe a family wants to have a situation where others can go and think about them or think about the rest of their family and that they're all buried in the same place. And there may be some convenience reasons for that. But I figure I'm not really going to care at that point. That when my body is dead, I'm not going to care about where that imperishable body is going to lay there and decay. The body that I need to be concerned about and planning for is the body that I'm going to have in eternity. So put more planning into that than you put into planning here on the earth that's not going to amount to anything. So we are not concerned about this body, the natural body. Our citizenship must belong to heaven and not on the earth for us to participate in this resurrection and have it turn out the way that we want it to turn out. If our citizenship is on the earth, you know, what are we doing? Well, we're putting all of our hopes and dreams and efforts into this body. And it's amazing really how much effort people will put into their body on this earth, especially as they get older. I had to go see a dermatologist a while back, and they wanted me to put my face in some kind of thing that was going to analyze it. And this had nothing to do with what I was there for. And so they told me it was going to tell me what the age of my skin was. And I thought, well, you know, it's going to tell me I have the skin of a 30-year-old. That's what I thought it was going to say. And it didn't. It told me that I had the skin of a 60-year-old, and so, you know, they're going to try to help me with that. They're going to sell me all kinds of expensive products to make me have the skin of my youth. And it was not worth it to me to do that. And so I'll just turn the lights down low, and then nobody can see what my skin looks like. You know, but the point is that they have a lot of people that are very interested in that, and they make a lot of money off of it because they have people that panic about what the so-called age of their skin is. And so they're going to sink money into to whatever product, plastic surgery or whatever, to hold on to you. And it's a big money-making industry. But it really, you know, goes against with, you know, what Paul is saying, that the earthly body is not the thing that's important. There's nothing wrong with trying to keep in shape and to be healthy and trying to look nice. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's not the most important thing. Our citizenship needs to belong to heaven, and we need to be concentrating on that spiritual body that will take place at the resurrection. When Christ returns, 2 Peter tells us that the earth is going to be burned up, our bodies are going to be changed, we're going to raise up to live with Him forever if we have been faithful. So everything that we can see here is temporary. It's perishable. And our citizenship in heaven means that we have our eyes on something else. And we wait for that, and we want to submit to the commands of the Lord. Citizenship in heaven means that's where we belong. That, you know, we're awaiting that reality of the resurrected Christ, for us to be resurrected. Not for the physical life that we live now, but we're going to keep our eyes on eternity and live in such a way that we can be in heaven for eternity. So Paul is encouraging the Corinthian brethren not to get so tied up thinking about, you know, what your body's going to be like, whether or not it's going to decay, and what, you know, God's going to take care of your resurrected body. You need to take care of getting that body to where you want to be for eternity. And we'll talk more about that in the rest of 1 Corinthians chapter 15, because, you know, Paul wraps that subject up, talking about inheriting the kingdom of God and what we need to do to accomplish that. So I hope this be useful to you and an encouragement to you to live in such a way that you're going to take care of that imperishable, incorruptible body and be together in heaven for eternity with all the saints. If we can help you in any way to do that, we invite you to come. While we stand together and sing.